produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. This is Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, moving beyond punishment. On this month's edition of Free Culture Radio, we look at moving drug policies beyond punishment, away from criminal legal responses, and toward a more sensible drug policy based in human rights, which addresses the root causes of substance use without stigma. The Global Commission on Drug Policy released a report recently entitled Beyond Punishment: From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform. The report exposes how punitive drug policies have driven mass incarceration and grave human rights violations around the world. In 2023 alone, for example, over 3.1 million people were arrested for drug-related offenses, with 20% of the global prison population detained for such crimes, nearly half of them for simple possession. The Global Commission's report underscores the devastating consequences of prohibitionist policies, including more than 1 million overdose deaths in the U.S. in the past two decades. It highlights systemic inequities, such as indigenous peoples in Canada being six times more likely to face drug-related arrests than their white counterparts, and also illustrates the disproportionate burdens on women and children, which deepen cycles of poverty and marginalization. The Commission's report was presented at a side event entitled Beyond Punishment: From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Criminal Justice and Crime Prevention. On this edition of Free Culture Radio, we're going to hear presentations by some of the speakers from that event. Let's start with Dr. Jeff Gallop, a member of the Global Commission on Drug Policy and a former Premier of Western Australia.
Firstly, can I thank all of those that have been involved in this event for your invitation to the Global Commission to attend. It's the first time that we've come to this particular activity since our formation back in 2011, and we do appreciate the opportunity to present our views to you. The Global Commission was created, as I indicated, back in 2011, and the idea was that we bring together politicians, senior policymakers within government, in all spheres of life, political, economic, and cultural, to make the case that the war on drugs has failed and we need to move to a new set of initiatives. We recommend drug policy reform mainly by means of five pathways. One, to put people's health and safety first. Two, to ensure access to essential medicines and pain control. Three, to end the criminalisation and incarceration of people who use drugs. Four, to refocus enforcement responses to drug trafficking and organised crime. And finally, to regulate drug markets so that the governments are in control. We've developed this particular set of themes around the idea that the war on drugs and the prohibitionism that feeds it wastes money and wrecks lives. Wastes money and wrecks lives. And they are the two amongst other issues that we put on the table for consideration by our public policy makers. To that end, we've published many reports. The one that is being launched here today, Beyond Punishment: From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform. We think it's an important contribution to a debate that we need to have in terms of those who suffer as a result of their use and abuse, perhaps, of drugs, and for those who need more information about the whole issue. We point out that attempts to control or eliminate the drug trade have fueled increased violence, toxic drug suppliers, and crises in criminal justice systems. The report goes further and says that prohibition has undermined and damaged public health, human rights, and the rule of law. While those who control and profit from illegal markets are responsible for violence, exploitation, and undermining state security, it is the most vulnerable individuals who feel the full brunt of the criminal justice system. Those without control, those who are exploited, those with the least power. It's not surprising, although a long time coming, that the drug control conventions in 1961, 1971 and 1988 are now the subject of wide-ranging criticism from both medical scientists and social researchers. But that's a story for another day. What we are seeing now, I think, is a bringing together, indeed bringing together something that should have happened, I think, earlier in our debates on this issue, bringing together all of the issues that relate to illicit drug use, rather than have rights, health and security factors being considered separately along a different railway line, to have them unified in discussion and analysis. Currently, estimates show that about 292 million people use narcotic drugs. They do so for a wide range of reasons, and not all amongst them experience difficulties. UNODC estimates that about 10 to 14% of users experience forms of dependency. It's not a new problem, this, of course, or not a new issue, perhaps I should say. It's been happening for millennia. Research in Spain indicates that people were getting high on hallucinogenic drugs around 3,000 years ago. What has been subject to change are the drugs themselves, and today they can be seriously potent. In our report, we point to the over 1 million of people who have died from overdose in the last two decades in North America. Synthetic opioids are the main part of the picture. Drug checking has become a matter of life and death. I was pleased to hear the ambassador mention the role that that now plays in the Swiss approach to policy. Despite our conventions, despite our criminalisation, and despite our policing, the problems persist. As the report put it, the triggers for drug dependency are multifaceted, often including responses to trauma, adverse child experiences, homelessness, and self-medication for health conditions, or neurodiversity. Responding to these experiences by criminalising people is disproportionate and counterproductive. Rather than addressing the underlying issues that contribute to dependency, criminalisation often exacerbates them, with punitive measures leading to further marginalisation, making it harder for individuals to access support. It is the concerns about the treatment ethics involved and the overall effectiveness that has led to the case for decriminalisation of drug use and possession for use, and for legal regulation of supply. The Global Commission recommends two pathways as part of the five pathways that deal with these issues. We recommend that states stop criminalising people for drug use and possession and rely on alternatives to incarceration for non-violent, low-level participants in illicit drug markets, such as small farmers, couriers, and others involved in the production, transport, and sale of illicit drugs. The most effective way to reduce the extensive harms of the drug prohibition regime and to advance the goals of public health and safety is ultimately to bring drugs under control through responsible legal regulation. Therefore, states must consider the legal regulation of drugs as the responsible pathway to undermine organised crime, which can liberate resources to counter its root causes, as well as mitigate any anticipated changes in organised crime activity. Prohibitive, punitive, and criminalising policies also ensure high-risk behaviours, such as unsafe injecting, while deterring people in need of drug treatment from seeking it, from fear of the stigma attached. Now, we have seen a very interesting and important change in our society in recent years, and that has been the development of harm reduction. Needle exchange programs, for example, have been a highly effective harm reduction response. Add to that overdose prevention centres, drug checking, which we mentioned, safer supply models, take-home naloxone, opioid agonist therapy, Put all that together in a package, and we're doing better now than we ever did in the past. And we reached that bottom of the road, the intersection, which has on the other side the criminalisation through the conventions, and we have opposition within some parts of our society to any of these issues. Another important part of our report is to focus on the need for equality considerations. This is a report that tries to bring in the range of issues and put them together: health, freedom, and also security. But it's not just a it's also a question of the redistribution and distribution aspects of power and status. While drug use is widespread across all socioeconomic backgrounds, those living in deprivation, particularly racial and ethnic minority groups and young people from these communities, are disproportionately criminalised for drug offences. Inequality is also a driver of drug dependency and increases the likelihood of economically disadvantaged individuals becoming involved in the illegal market as low-level actors. Once in these low-level positions, they face greater exposure to law enforcement and are more likely to be criminalised. Meanwhile, individuals with more resources can evade arrest or secure qualified legal representation. And the report has many statistics from different jurisdictions about how those inequalities work, and particularly in relation to racial minorities. Let me now conclude my remarks by saying that we need to incorporate the social and economic factors at play in the cycle of exclusion. We see it all around us in the United Nations, the sustainability principles, which are a very useful guide for a good government. Policies of inclusion and programs for harm reduction all matter, but so do to integrated social and legal support services. Again, we need the UN position on SDGs to come into the major decision-making processes and not treat it as a separate item. So that leads me to my final remarks. As the High Commissioner for Human Rights put it so well only recently in Brandenburg, we must continue pursuing humane drug policies that advance all human rights. There is a real human rights issue here when we look at our practices, the ideas that underpin those practices, and the failure to look at what the evidence tells us about all of those factors. My final comment comes from the late Pope, who wrote extensively on the marginalised people. He said of the challenge of compassion, "It takes us to concrete action and the reinstatement of the marginalised." The reinstatement of the marginalised. Very powerful language. Truly, he said of his own faith, which may not be shared by everyone, and indeed isn't, it's one faith amongst others. He said of his faith that the gospel of the marginalised is where our credibility is at stake, is discovered and revealed. The same could be said about all of us. Our credibility is at stake in doing things that we now know don't achieve their purpose and just make matters worse. So I commend you to read our report. And once again, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to talk about the Global Commission response to drug policy. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Jeff Gallop, a member of the Global Commission on Drug Policy and a former Premier of Western Australia, speaking on a panel entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Criminal Justice and Crime Prevention. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Free Culture Radio. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Welcome back. We're listening to portions of a panel organized by the Global Commission on Drug Policy entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Criminal Justice and Crime Prevention. One of the presenters was Fariba Sultani, chief of the HIV-AIDS section and global AIDS coordinator at the UN Office on Drugs and Crime.
So let me begin by thanking the government of Switzerland and the Global Commission on Drug Policy for convening this timely event and for the launch of this important report. The drug policy, the report speaks directly to the challenges we face across justice and health systems. And it reflects what we see every day in our work, especially in the context of drugs, drug use, prisons, law enforcement, and HIV and hepatitis, which we are addressing. Across many countries, criminal justice responses to drug use remains rooted in punitive measures rather than care. While we really know what works, and we've had the interventions on addressing the drug use in a public health-based and in a health-related measures, on especially for addressing HIV and hepatitis and also for providing drug dependence treatment. From policing to sentencing policies and prison conditions, people who use drugs continue to be disproportionately targeted, detained, and marginalized. The result is not greater safety, but deeper cycles of harm, huge burden on the criminal justice system, overcrowded prisons, entrenched stigma, and missed opportunities for addressing the underlying issues through a public health-based approach. Prisons are particularly emblematic of these challenges. Today, over 11.5 million people are incarcerated worldwide, and more than one-third are held in pre-trial detention centers. A significant proportion of these individuals are incarcerated for drug-related offenses, often minor, non-violent ones. According to UNODC World Drug Report, 2.2 million people are in prison for drug-related offenses, and of these, roughly one in five are held solely for possession for personal use. Do they need to be in prison? I don't think so. We also know that people in prison are significantly more likely to be living with HIV, hepatitis, tuberculosis than the general population. According to the latest data, 1.3% of people in prisons are living with HIV, 15.1% are living with hepatitis C, and 2.8% have active tuberculosis. These figures are not abstract. They are not just figures. They represent individuals who are exposed to serious, often preventable health risks. And really, it's not necessary to expose them to these health risks. Structural conditions in prisons, the overcrowding, stigma, lack of continuity of care, and separation of prison health systems from national health services exacerbate the risks of infectious disease transmission. These risks are compounded by widespread unprotected sex, unsafe injecting practices, and gender-based violence. The failure to address the health needs of people in prisons, especially those living with or at risk of HIV, hepatitis, and TB, is not only a prison health issue, it is a public health issue. In response, UNODC, we have been supporting countries to address these gaps through technical assistance, policy guidance, and capacity building. We work to scale up evidence-informed, right-based responses to HIV and health issues in closed settings, as well as working, of course, on HIV harm reduction. A key part of this is promoting the comprehensive package of interventions for HIV prevention, treatment, and care in prisons. As I mentioned, we know what works. We know what works in the community, and we know what works in prisons. This includes for prison systems 15 essential interventions such as HIV testing and counseling, provision of opioid agonist therapy, provision of condoms, needle and syringe programs, and overdose prevention and management. These interventions are rooted in evidence-based public health and human rights principles, principles that are still far too absent in custodial environments. Globally, only about 60 countries provide opioid agonist therapy in prison settings, and even fewer have implemented overdose prevention or needle and syringe programs in line with international standards. The gap is a public health crisis, and it is also a missed opportunity for more effective justice. Even in these 60 countries that we're talking about, the provision is minimal. It's tokenistic, and we really, in order to really have an impact on the epidemic, we really need to work with countries to scale up the interventions, to have one opioid agonist treatment available for 200 people in one prison. It just doesn't work. So it is just ticking the box, which we really need to address and make the services available to a broader number of people who need it. We also advocate for systematic reforms, reducing pretrial detention, ensuring adequate funding for prison health, and addressing the specific needs of vulnerable populations, especially women who face compounded risk and additional barriers to care. This year marks the 10th anniversary of the Nelson Mandela rules, and the 15th year of the Bangkok rules, which uphold the principles of equivalence to care, and that people derived of liberty must receive the same quality of healthcare as the ones in the community. Yet implementation of these standards remain limited. UNODC, we have extensive experience in supporting countries to address HIV and other health issues in prisons and other closed settings. We have been working in South Africa to strengthen coordination across justice and health institutions to ensure continuity of HIV and hepatitis care for people in custody. In Kyrgyzstan, we've worked with women in prisons to ensure gender-responsive health programs and to address trauma linked to drug use and incarceration. And in Ukraine, amid ongoing conflict, we are collaborating with civil society and correction services to maintain and expand HIV and other support services for people in and those released from prisons. However, our efforts focus not only on improving health service delivery in custodial settings, but also rethinking the role of law enforcement as a part of a broader rights-based public health response. I think the commissioner also referred to that. Police officers are often the first point of contact for people who use drugs. In 2022, nearly 7 million people came into formal contact with police for drug-related offenses, two-thirds for possession, for use or possession. However, police respond in these interactions are either facilitate to access to life-saving services or entrench fear, stigma, and marginalization. We work to reshape law enforcement practices as enablers and not barriers to the already very limited services available for people who use drugs. This is done through training, normative guidance, policy engagement, and we are promoting what we call public health-oriented policing. For example, just last year, we trained over 600 law enforcement officials across Bangladesh, Pakistan, the Philippines, Uzbekistan, India, South Africa, and Kazakhstan to integrate evidence and human rights-based policing practices as it relates to HIV response. We have also initiated the update of our global training manual for law enforcement officials to strengthen evidence-based, health-centered policing. The revision expands guidance on rights-based approaches to HIV prevention, treatment, and care, ensuring law enforcement officers are equipped to engage effectively with all key populations, reducing stigma and supporting public health efforts. So UNODC is committed to supporting this shift, whether through technical guidance, training, or country-level partnerships. We are completely in line with the GDP report, rightly calling for fundamental shift from punishment and punitive approaches to public health partnerships and public health approaches. And we are working together with member states to build systems that uphold health, reduce harm, and promote human rights. We recognize that none of this work happens in a vacuum. What is needed now is the courage to act, the commitment to scale up, and the political will to ensure that our systems do not punish vulnerability, but protect life. I thank you all.
That was Fariba Sultani, Chief of the HIV-AIDS Section and Global AIDS Coordinator at UNODC, speaking on a panel entitled Beyond Punishment, From Criminal Justice Responses to Drug Policy Reform, which was held May 21st during the 34th session of the UN's Commission on Criminal Justice and Crime Prevention. And for now, that's it. You've been listening to Free Culture Radio. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Free Culture Radio is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's audio port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Free Culture Radio is available as a podcast or direct download. Links are at the website kboo.fm/freeculture, along with an archive of past shows. Theme music for Free Culture Radio is composed and performed by Tom Nickel and Four Dimensional Nightmare and is used with permission of the artist. We'll be back in a month to continue our examination of drugs, drug cultures, and the influence of drugs on society. Thanks again for listening. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!